Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is retired copper mine worker and an active union activist, Arthur Flores, 95 years old. Mr. Flores, New Mexico was only 6 years old when you were born.
That's right. The state was very new. I was born on October the 5th, 1918, in Deming, New Mexico. And let me tell you, things around here are not the same as they were then. Things have changed so much that people wouldn't recognize New Mexico if they'd go back to 1918. Even I remember 1920-21, the roads were not paved, but sometimes if it rained, you couldn't even see the license plate by the mud that splattered on those license plates. Cars are different. You didn't need a driver's license to drive a car. Compared to nowadays, it was rather primitive. And I remember those days when I started school. And now I was born in October. So when I went to try to go to school at age 5, well, I was going to be 6 in October. I was told I couldn't go. I had to wait another year. You know, by age 5, I was reading books because my grandmother taught me how to read. My grandmother was half Indian, and when she grew up as a youngster, she was sent to school. If you look at, go back in history, you'll find that the Indians were being sent to school. That's school for the Indian children. And they taught them the language, it taught them to read, they taught them even arithmetic. And that's what my grandmother taught me ever since I was 4. By 5, I was reading. So that by the time I was 6 and went to school, I could read regular books. So when I went to 5th grade, I remember the teacher asked us, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, when it came to me, I said, "Well, I want to be a scientist or an attorney, a lawyer." And she said, "No, no, you can't. You're a Mexican. Mexicans don't have the brains to do that. You're going to have to take manual training." So I said, "Okay, I'll take manual training." Of course, I was a young child, and even though I read some books, I still believed that the teachers were very highly educated, and what they told us was fact. Well, what happened is that, when, of course, during the Depression in 1932, we had to get away from the mining area and go to the farms. So we went near Hatch, to live near Hatch, a little place called Placitas now. I think it was called Placitas at that time, but its real name was Santa Teresa. Anyway, we worked in the farms for 10 cents an hour. They paid us $1 for 10 hours work in a day. And during 1 year, beginning in March, before the farms started up, because the farms didn't start up until later on, April or May, I started working with an Indian stonemason. When he paid me $3 for the week. So I said, "Gee," I thought I was going to get $1 a day. "You know what?" He said, "For what I'm teaching you, I get paid." He said, "You're going to be a stonemason when I'm through." I was 15. So we finished the job that we had, and he moved off somewhere else. And about that time, a job came to cutting trees. And then I came to the CC camps here in Las Cruces, to the Bureau of Reclamation CC camp. We fixed the irrigation canals. And then we started a dam up near Picacho. So when that job ended, because they only let us stay 9 months, I went back to Santa Rita because my dad had been called back to work in 1936. The mine started up, and he went back to work in the store. So I went to try to get a job, and they were kind of hard to get. You couldn't get on very easy. So my dad talked to the, he worked in a store, he knew the mine engineer, and they had asked him, "Could you get a job for my son in his shop?" And then he told my dad, "I'm sorry, but your son is a Mexican. He has to start in the track when it starts." So I did start in the track when I was hired in 1939. In March 1939, I started working there. When the war came, when Pearl Harbor was bombed by the Japanese, I volunteered right away. volunteer for the Navy. And I was told, we don't have the facilities, enough facilities in San Diego yet, but we'll call you when we're ready. So they called me in January. I went to San Diego. They started finding out what level of education we had. So they did an IQ for every one of us. The day they did my IQ, the officer came out to me kind of excited. He said, you are Sir Flores? I said, yes. He said, you know what? You're not going to go swap decks. You're going to go to school. I said, why? He said, you know, you have an IQ of 162. Do you know what it means? I said, well, I think it's kind of high. He sure is. He said, you're going to go to school. So he sent me to school.
Where did they send you? What kind of school did you go to?
I went to a school where I had to learn how to repair aircraft because the country was planning to do a program in the Pacific to go from island to island to fight the Japanese. So they needed instructors, and I was supposed to be trained as an instructor at one of the air bases, which after school I went to Pensacola, and I became an instructor there. And let me tell you one thing I found out, contrary to what the teacher had told me when I went to fifth grade and told her I wanted to be a scientist or an attorney, I found out I was so much more intelligent than the rest of those kids around her that it was not even funny. What I'm trying to stress here is that when the war ended and I went back to work, and then I found out that the company, even though I was a veteran, even though from my own experiences, I had found out I was more intelligent than all these people around, I was treated as a second-class citizen.
How were you treated when you were in the Navy?
In the Navy, I was treated very well and equal. And not only that, I remember once I started helping the guys, I used to write their letters to their girlfriends. Because I helped them more than that, they treated me kind of as a leader to me for advice on this and that. So it made a big difference. And when I came back to work at the mine and found out I was treated as a second-class citizen and a veteran, I was a veteran, I said, you know what? I'm going to change this. That's when I started making noises about changing the things occurred around there.
What things occurred around there?
Well, for one, we were five different locals in that area. We had no political power. We had no economic power. We had no power at all. And I complained to my international representative, the organizer, and he said, I can't do anything for you. He said, I got some locals here, I got some locals in El Paso, I got some locals in Arizona I got to take care of, but I'll tell Denver. So they sent down a person that's going to help us. His name was Clint Jenks. When he came down, I don't know who else he saw, but I know he went to my house and he told me, he said, you're the one who's kind of complaining about the union and stuff here. I said, yes, and I told him why. I said, we're all scattered. He said, we're supposed to be working together. He said, you're right. He says, I said, can we do anything about it? He says, yes, we can. We can amalgamate. And that's how come we did that. He said, but I can't do it by myself. You have to help me.
What year was this?
That was in 1946, I think it was. I know that we received a charter from the International, and I think it was in 48. But the charter exists. It's posted there in the Union Hall in Bayard, New Mexico. It's called Local 890. And it shows when we got the charter, and it shows who was the first officers. Clint Jenks was the first president. I was the first vice president. So after that, the Union was involved in the making of the movie Salt of the Earth.
There was a lot that led to it. How did they get involved with making the movie?
I was not involved in making the movie at all. Let me tell you why. In 1951, because of my activities in the Union and doing all the things I had been doing, the International sent me as an organizer to Arizona to organize the mine workers over there. So while I was over there organizing in the Ray Mines Division, that's when the movie was made. So I wasn't here.
Now, I understand that Clinton Jenks knew the people, the directors who made the movie. He told them there was something going on in New Mexico. So the Empire Zinc Strike, you were involved with that. That was what the movie is based on.
Yeah, I was involved in the strike. I was, before I went to Arizona, even though I worked in Santa Rita, I was still working. On my off hours, I'd go to the picket line. I'd take pictures. I talked to the guys and helped whichever way I could. And for some reason, and there must have been a good reason, why did the union choose me as an organizer to go to Arizona? They had a reason for that, and I think it's because of my activities in helping the workers there in Santa Rita and in Grand County District.
What were the conditions like during that time that they were fighting for?
The conditions
for?
At that time for us were rather terrible. We lived in shacks. I don't remember, no water inside. We had to go outside to the tap. We had to dig a hole to put the previs outside. You know, the ones that have a little moon carved in the side. And we bathed in tubs, put a tub in the floor, filled it with hot water. We had to climb in there. And then they had to drag the tub out and throw the water out. And for stoves, we had to go out to the woods and bring wood and the wood stoves. And then I remember one thing, too. In wintertime, my dad worked at the store, and he'd bring cardboard boxes because I could stand near the wall and look outside through the cracks in the wall. So what kind of houses we lived in. So my dad would bring those cardboard boxes and nail them on the wall to kind of keep the cold air out and the little bit of heat we had inside the house inside. You know, at the age I am now, I couldn't have stood that. But as a youngster, it was nothing to me.
So did everybody live in those conditions?
The Mexicans only lived in those conditions. Now, the Anglos, and I know a lot of people blame them because the company wanted us to think that way. They lived in nice houses because the company made houses for them that had inside plumbing, everything, electricity, and everything that they needed to live comfortable. So, and that was true not only for us, but for the Empire Zinc workers. And of course, some other workers lived inside of Silver City. Some lived in Baird, and they had houses, and they traveled to work. But the majority of the workers of these two companies were treated like we did not belong in this country. We treated us terrible. So we had to change that, and we changed it. Not only that, we didn't not only change the conditions on the job, but we changed the political picture in Grand County.
The political picture in what way?
That means that before we had no offices that had Mexicans. We're Americans, but we have Spanish surnames. But when we got through with this, we had not only the district attorney by the name of Sedna, we had county commissioners. We elected them. I even ran for a judge and was a judge for a while. It was after we changed the political picture in Grand County. And some changes came about. I don't know. I think I contributed my 2 cents to it. But the change was not made by me. It was made by the people working together. And the only thing I did, kind of a push and an idea that it could be done. And once they saw they could do it, they did it. So don't let anybody tell you that some Superman came around and did it for them. Nobody did. They had to do it themselves. So that's the kind of thing that happened during that time that I can remember back as to why some changes came about and how.
We talked about the mines and the salt of the earth. Where did you learn this ethic? I understand that your father lived to be 102.
I learned my work ethic from my dad. You know, he always told me, he said, Art, he says, you know, you always have something to do. Always have something to do. Look forward. He said, do you know why? Because once you give up and once you stop climbing, you reach the top. And after you reach the top, you know where you go? You go down. So don't ever stop. Keep doing something. And as long as you do that, you'll keep going. And you know what? My dad lived to 102. And that was his theory, that as long as you had something ahead for you to do, and you know that you hadn't reached the top, you kept going. And I think it's true.
Is that how you've gotten to reach to be 95?
Yeah, this is one of the things I think it has helped me. One of the things I think that, and some people ask me, and I said, look, I says, besides learning something new, it's your attitude that keeps you younger. You know what kills your age or ages you faster? Stress. Don't let stress get to you. When you run into a terrible situation, don't try to change it because you can't. And once it happens, it happens. Just sit back, relax, and figure out how you're going to meet the new situation. And that way, you're far ahead and you do better. And you don't hurt yourself because you hurt yourself by getting stressed. And I don't get stressed. That's one thing I've tried to keep from doing all my life. And I think it helps a lot. People should learn that. And I believe that stress shortens your life.
Mr. Flores, I really appreciate you coming out and talking to us on Puentes. You've been a bridge to the community for many years, at 95 years. What do you plan to do now to reach 100?
I'm still active in some things. I'm still a voter registrar. I try to help that way. I think that the more people get out and vote, that democracy is served. That's one of the things that we have to do. We have to get people to get out and vote their convictions.
And you continue to read a lot, don't you?
Yes, I am. I think that's another thing, too. You have to continue reading. I do read every day. Put some aside some time of my own that I'm not physically doing something to read. Because, and especially if you want to keep up with what's going on, you want to know why some of the things that are going on are happening. So you can keep up with events.
Thank you again, Mr. Arturo Flores. Arthur Flores from Grant County. And thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Thank you. I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to speak my mind and recount my experiences.
Thank you. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.